Yeah, on time.
Crazy.
Yeah, they wish my sermons would end on time. That's what they're saying. I know. I know. They get the choir to tell him to be on time. Have him quit it on time. Just finish it on time. I know. I see the notes. You guys write notes to each other, and I read them after worship service. I read it on time. On time. That's what the disciples were wondering there at Pentecost. They were all gathered. Remember last week they're told, wait, go up in the room and wait. Wait until you're filled with the Spirit. And you can just see them asking each other, well, how are you going to know? How do you know when it's time? You know, I mean, really, sometimes it's hard to wait, isn't it? It's hard. I mean, you wait for Christmas, but at least you know when Christmas is. You wait for a special birthday, but at least you know when your birthday is, or you're waiting for a birth. Oh, no, you don't know when that is. That's right. You don't know. God knows when that is. You wait for a wedding date. You knew June 25th. It wasn't like you woke up that morning and decided to get married. That had been planned and planned. You knew it was coming. But sometimes some things happen. You don't know when it's going to be. You know it's going to happen, but you don't know when is it going to happen. How are you going to know? The Spirit's going to come upon you. And the disciples, they weren't bright to begin with. You could just see the confusion on their faces. Well, how are we going to know? Will it tingle? How are we going to know? Is it going to hurt? They've talked about fire. That sounds kind of dangerous. I don't know. Maybe we should have some jars of water. No, no, no water. The last time we had water, remember, it all turned to wine. It was a bad deal. It just, how do you know? How do you know when the Spirit is coming down? How are you going to know when your life is touched by the Spirit? How are you going to know? Well, as it turns out, it was very, very evident to them. The Spirit came down upon them. It was a holy tornado coming through there, a mighty rush of wind. Everybody speaking different languages, and everybody could understand everybody's languages. Even though they didn't understand what was going on, they could understand that something was happening. Something mighty was happening. They were having church, and they weren't in control. Have you ever been in that experience? Have you ever been in an experience where there was church and you weren't in control? I can tell you there have been times in my life when that's happened, and I'm supposed to be in control. I still remember, I was in Louisville, Kentucky, fresh out of school, all right, just coming out of seminary and college and all the way they try to get the Spirit out of you, all right? And then I'm coming in, I go to Louisville, Kentucky, and Mabel Lewis comes up to me and asked me if I would preach at the Hill Street Christian Church Revival. Don't you be giving it away. Asked me if I would speak at the Hill Street Christian. Now in Louisville, there are 34 disciple churches. All right, we meet every month. Well, I don't know. I haven't been there in a long time. But we used to meet every month. All the ministers would gather together, have lunch, share ideas, all kinds of great things going on. And you know, big churches, small churches, but we're all gathered together. And she asked me, I'm in Louisville 6 months. 6 months. And she's already asking me, oh, yeah, uh-huh, because I'm the greatest preacher ever. Uh-huh. They already known about me. They're asking me. So I go to the minister's meeting, and in my own little humble way, happen to announce that, hey, by the way, I've been asked to preach a revival. Hill Street Christian Church Revival. They asked me to preach there. I'm being all humble about it, of course. Because, you know, when you're 24, you're always humble. They all look at me and say, yeah, she already asked us. I was like, what? And then they go, do you know where the church is? I go, on Hill Street. I went to school. Hill Street Christian Church is on Hill Street. You know where Hill Street is? No. It's downtown. You all ever been in a city where there's a downtown and then there's a downtown? That's where that church was. It wasn't in the downtown. It was in the downtown. My happy feeling was gone. Understand, I grew up predominantly white church. Was educated primarily in white college. Not in my high school was integrated, but college there wasn't a lot of African, and in seminary hardly any. So my experiences had all been in white church. The only churches I'd ever been in were white. You could tell, you just because it was boring. That's how you can tell if you're in a white church. It's boring. All right? Now, to their credit, you get out earlier. All right? You get out earlier, but you're bored. And you're glad. That's why they release you. They just let you go. And I go down to Hill Street, and I could tell I'm going into a worser and worser and worser neighborhood. Now, the only thing that is saving me is my car was worse than the cars that were on blocks. I'm like, okay, well, nobody's going to steal my car, and I'm not intimidating or anything like that. So I parked the car, and I go into the Hill Street Christian Church, and, you know, obviously I'm in a neighborhood that I'm totally unaccustomed to, and I am the only white person within 25 miles. And I walk into the church, and I'm unfamiliar totally with the worship service, with the worship style. I ask for a bulletin. They just looked at me. We don't do that here. This is church. We let God direct us in church. And it was great. They had great music. Everything's going on. And then all of a sudden, okay, they go, okay, now go. I'm like, okay, go. You know, and I get over to the pulpit, all right, because at that time that's the way I preached. You had, you know, 3 points, a poem, and a white piece of paper, and you just, that's how you were supposed to preach. And I get there, and all of a sudden the women started raising their hand. There were women raising their hand, and I hadn't even said anything yet. I was totally confused. I'm like, how can you have a question? I haven't said anything. And they've already got questions. I'm unaccustomed to questions in this sermon, but I'm sure afterwards we'll have fellowship time. And they're just going, they go, well, I'm like, well, what? I don't understand what is going on. I'm in charge of a revival, and I'm the tail wagging a dog. I have no idea what is going on here at all. And then all of a sudden, the deacons were all sitting in front. They were all men. And they all say, walk with the preacher. I'm looking around under the pulpit. Is there something I'm supposed to walk? I don't see anything. What am I supposed, come on, preacher, walk with it. What? Here, come on, preacher. I'm out here going, okay, I'm walking. I got to go back and look at my notes. I'll walk. Come run, preacher. Got to run with it. I was the most confused person. I had no idea what was going on in church. And I was supposed to be in charge. They revived me. It was an unbelievable experience. I had a great time. I had a great time. It was just like I had never felt so free. It was just absolutely wonderful. You have to understand that was a different experience for me. I had just come out of 4 years of college, 3 years of seminary, where everybody in the world felt they had a right to tell you how to preach. Everybody was giving you some opinion about something. And here, these people were just like, they just assumed that you already knew how to preach, or else God wouldn't have put you there. And the Holy Spirit filled the place. Now, the sermon was terrible. I'll be honest with you. I've preached bad sermons. I know a bad sermon, okay? But the experience was so powerful. It's an amazing thing that can happen when we're willing to give up control, when we're willing to put aside the illusion that we're in charge. Sometimes, you know, that's, if you think about it in your life, most of the time, the significant things that happened, you We're not in charge of it. It happened to you. It didn't happen because of you. It happened to you. And you were just following along where God was leading you. And sometimes you're like, I don't want to go there. And God's like, I didn't ask. You see, that's the thing. I get tired. I use the language a lot. You know, we need volunteers for this. We need volunteers for that. No, God doesn't work with volunteers. God drafts you. God drafts you. He calls you. He empowers you. He anoints you. He grabs you by the throat sometimes and just brings you along. He will drag you kicking and screaming into the gates of the kingdom, into the gates of heaven. God will grab a hold of you if you are willing to let God have control, to let God be in control of your life. Amazing things can happen. I know I'm sharing biographical things today, but I just, it's amazing when you let God work in your life like that. I went to seminary in Kentucky. 3 years. The longest 3 years of my life. It was not an experience that I would have wished upon anybody. I was away from family. I was away from friends. I was away from people who thought like me. It was just hard. And I'm preaching to, I have to tell you, all right, this is going to be a long day. When I got to seminary, all right, understand, my paperwork was fantastic. They had never met me. They didn't. They gave me a full scholarship and a stipend just because of all the work I had done in college. But they had never met me, ever. They had no idea who I was. I show up on that campus. My hair is down here. All right? I'm in blue jeans and barefoot. Yeah. The other students were wearing three-piece suits. Seriously. Closely cropped hair. I mean, if ever a person, I had to show three forms of identification to prove to them who I was. I clearly didn't fit in. But because they didn't know who I was, they had already situated me with the Maxwell Street Presbyterian Church. That was going to be my student charge. Maxwell Street Presbyterian Church. Now, I wasn't going to be the preacher. I was going to be the associate preacher. All right, at the Maxwell Street Presbyterian Church. That was one of the richest congregations in Lexington. They had a pipe organ. I kid you not. That pipe organ would have filled this entire, all of that area. It was unbelievable. But it turned out that what they meant once they saw me, that I was going to be the associate to the associate to the associate to the associate, janitor's associate. It became very, very clear that there was not a place for me in their ministry. And so I go to the seminary and I said, look, this is not a good fit. They're never going to let me preach. They're never going to let me teach. They don't want me to do anything except for take out the trash. I don't want to do that. I want to preach. They go, well, that's going to be a problem. I ended up preaching at the Whitley City Christian Church. You all heard of that one, haven't you? It's off U.S. 27, 10 miles north of the Tennessee state line. Seriously. There were four people. The youngest one was 76. I would drive all the way down there on a two-lane highway so that I could preach because I wanted to preach so bad. I just wanted to preach so bad. And I go all the way down there, and sometimes there'd be a note on the door. We canceled church today. You know. Gladys has pneumonia or whatever, you know, okay. Now, they had an envelope. They had the $20 because you got $20 for going all the way down there to preach. It's a two-hour drive. It takes a lot of gas. So when it came time for me to graduate, back in those days when you got ready to graduate, you would put what they called your papers, put your papers in. And that meant that you could get relocated. See, in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, we don't have bishops. We don't have people telling you where you have to go. It's a church decides they want you, then they hire you. And if you decide you want to go there, you decide you want to go there, and you have a negotiation, you know, and it works. That's how you guys got stuck with me. You all weren't even here to make the decision. The ones that made the decision left. All right? So that's how. So anyways, when it came time to do all of that, they said, where would you like to go? I kid you not, I put on the paper, anywhere but Kentucky. Anywhere but Kentucky. I was so tired of talking about tobacco and horses and UK basketball. It was the only thing everybody... And I'm just like, I got to get out of this place. It's killing me here. Anywhere but Kentucky. And God laughed. I ended up in Louisville. Louisville's in Kentucky. Just letting you know. Now, had I ever been to Louisville first, I would have said anywhere in, you know, Louisville was fine. Louisville had an orchestra. Louisville had great parks. Louisville, I was very, but at the time, I thought it was terribly not funny of God to do that to me. Put me in Louisville when I said I will go anywhere except for Kentucky, and that's where I ended up. I tell the region that's where I've signed the contract with. The regional minister calls me to the side and says, your church is going to be dead in 6 months. He says, that church has been a problem for 3 years and they're going to close. I'm sorry. We'll try to find you another church. Well, one of the best ways to get me to do something is to tell me it can't be done. You know how that is? I see all you. You know why? Because you're the same way. So this church is not closing in 6 months. And it didn't. It didn't. No, it wasn't because of me. It was just because I'm 24 and I'm not going to let anything die and I'm going to keep it going and all those things. But the thing is, when you allow God to work in your life, all kinds of great things happen. Beautiful, wonderful things happen. Not just in the church, but in your own personal life. I ended up in Louisville, Kentucky at the Newburgh Christian Church. And do you know what happened while I was there? Not only did that church get revived, not only did that church have an opportunity to feel God's presence and expand its ministries. While I was there, I met this tall, dark hair, beautiful woman. I met my wife there. I baptized her. She had never accepted Jesus Christ as her Lord and Savior. That was a blessing God gave to me. When we allow God to work in our lives and give up control, God will bless us in ways that utterly amaze us. Utterly amaze us. You let the Spirit move. Diane and I had not planned on having children. I won't even start all that testimony. Our lives were wonderfully, wonderfully impacted by the opportunities that God gave us to not just have our children, but the fostering and all the different children that have touched our lives. When we allow God to work in us, wonderful things will happen. Now look, there's no recipe for how it works. I can't tell you if you go and you say this prayer, if you'll go and sit and read this passage, if you'll stand this way and look that way, then you will feel God's presence. I can't tell you that any more than Jesus could tell the disciples. All he said was, when it happens, you're going to know. When it happens, you will know. You may not want to know. You may not want to go, but when it happens, you will know. But you have to be willing. You have to be willing to let go of control. Don't be in charge. To be filled with the Spirit means to let go and let God. That's what it means to be a disciple, to let go and let God. And there are areas in your life right now where God is asking you to let go. Let go. Trust me to lead you. Your life will be forever changed if you do. Amen.